Welcome. I'm Hanat Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On November 1st, Congress cut federal spending on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, also known as the Food Stamp Program, by $5 billion. According to a New York Times article, these cuts have already affected more than 47 million people. That's one in seven Americans, and is the deepest cut in the program has seen since its inception back in 1964. On top of that, the Republican-controlled House has already passed a bill that would cut food stamps even further, $40 billion over 10 years. The Senate's version, on the other hand, would cut $5 billion in the same amount of time. But it's clear to those who rely on food stamps that even a small cut puts people at grave risk of going hungry. The other people who see this firsthand are those who run local food banks. Paul Ash, who runs the San Francisco and Marin food banks, wrote an editorial in the San Francisco Chronicle this week. In it, he writes, "The public should know that Congress is voting for its constituents to go hungry. The debate is over how hungry." He continues to say that these cuts won't affect the food bank, except that thousands of families who rely on food stamps will turn to us when they have $80 or $90 or $100 less each month to buy food. And he says the truth is nonprofits cannot make up the difference. So today, how are nonprofit food banks faring in the face of these massive cuts to the food stamp program? Joining us today is Sue Sigler. She's the executive director of the California Association of Food Banks. Sue has led the organization to double the amount of fresh produce delivered to food banks through the Farm to Family program, currently at over 120 million pounds per year. She provides leadership to the Alliance to Transform CalFresh, a group of seven organizations working with federal, state, and county officials to increase CalFresh, or food stamp, access. She joins me in studio. Thank you for coming, Sue.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
And with us also is Keisha Nzui, advocacy manager of the Alameda County Community Food Bank. She's been with the food bank for 3 years, and she leads the bank policy efforts on a daily basis, and she joins us in studio as well. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. And Steve Bennett is the development director for Second Harvest Food Bank of Santa Cruz County. It's his responsibility to engage the community to raise the funds needed to provide 8 million pounds of healthy food a year to low-income families, children, and seniors. Steve joins us from the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And we want to invite you into the conversation as well. If you work in food banks or if you get food from a food bank, what's been your experience lately? Are you receiving food stamps? Were you receiving food stamps? What has the recent cut in the program meant for you personally or somebody you know? And does it mean you rely more on the food bank? If you volunteer in food banks, what are you seeing when you go there? And overall, what path do you think our nation should be on to end widespread hunger? Give us a call with your questions or comments today at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org, or better yet, post a web comment at yourcallradio.org. So, Keisha, let's start with you. Because the Alameda County Community Food Bank has this shocking statistic, basically, we're starting with you. You recently looked at calls to your emergency food helpline and compared the first 2 weeks of November this year, 2013, with the same 2 weeks from last year, 2012. Given that the cuts to food stamps happened in between those two times, what was the contrast you saw in your data?
So from November 1st, 2012 to November 18th, 2012, we received about 10 calls to our emergency food helpline from people who said they were calling because their CalFresh or food stamps had run out. And in that same time period this year, since the cuts were made November 1st, we received 51 calls. So that's a five-fold difference. And we know that that's, although it's just in quotes, 51 calls, that those people represent a whole bunch of other people who probably just didn't tell us that they're calling because their CalFresh ran out and it's only 2 weeks into the month.
And what does that tell you, that data, that increase?
Tells it that these cuts are devastating. They're inhumane, and people are going hungry. For a family of just a family of one, we have a volunteer who's volunteered with the food bank for many years, and for the past couple of years he's relied on CalFresh, and his cut is $11 per month. And his response to that is that he knows he'll have to fast for 2 days out of this month to be able to stretch his remaining dollars to be able to feed himself for this first month of cuts.
To fast. That's how he's
that's
calculated.
That's how he put it, that he would fast for 2 days.
Wow. And what are you hearing from other people? What kind of stories are you hearing from people after these food stamps?
Another mother's called in and for help, and she didn't know about the cuts. And when we told her, she's a mother of four, and she was brought to tears because she has no idea.
Nobody told her about cuts.
A lot of people were caught by surprise if they didn't hear from us, or they didn't hear from throughout the state. From each county administers the CalFresh program, so if they didn't hear from their county, so she was surprised.
So they were not sent anything in the mail. They were not. There was no communication of the cuts.
It would not have been up to the federal government to do that. CalFresh or SNAP nationally is administered by the USDA. And but in California, then the money is funneled in, and each county is responsible for that communication. So she was just in tears trying to figure out what it would mean. And then another family, family with two children, their goal, the dad is a truck driver and a musician. Their goal is always just to be able to feed their family healthy food. And again, they could lose up to $36, and they have no idea what will that mean and how will they be able to fill that gap and make sure their kids can eat well.
Right, and that will probably mean some major rebudgeting within the household. A recent New York Times article said, for many, a $10 or $20 cut in the monthly food budget would be absorbed with little notice, but for millions of poor Americans who rely on food stamps, the reductions that began this month present awful choices. For example, 1 gallon of milk for the kids instead of two, no fresh broccoli for dinner or snacks to take to school. It might mean, as they say, weeks of grits and margarine for breakfast. And for many, it'll mean turning to a food pantry or a soup kitchen by the middle of the month. Sue Sigler, what are you hearing from the food banks in terms of demand?
Well, I think it's important to put this in the context of what do food banks actually do. And if we look at the national picture, Feeding America, the National Food Bank Organization, estimates that its member food banks distribute about 3.31 billion meals each year. If we look at what was lost recently with the November 1 cuts through the sunset of the ARA funds, we saw then a loss of 1.9 billion meals nationally. If we add into that the loss to SNAP from the current proposal in the House, which would cut $40 billion from SNAP over the next 10 years, about $4 billion per year, we see a loss of another 1.5 billion meals. Add those two losses together, the 1.5 and the 1.9, and you come out with more lost meals than the entire food bank network nationally provides. So to ask food banks to double their efforts is really unrealistic. It's upsetting to us who work in the emergency food field to hear that come out of Washington, that, well, private charities will just make up the difference for any cuts that happen, because we know that there's still an extreme demand out there that food banks don't have the resources to meet already, and that we cannot shoulder the burden for more cuts to the SNAP program.
So you oversee California food banks, essentially. So is that right?
We're the membership organization for California food banks,
right?
Correct.
So what are you seeing here in the state, and what are the effects of these cuts, and is there any action plan, response?
Well, right now, let's take a look at what's happened since the recession. We all know that the demand for emergency food skyrocketed with the advent of the recession. And in 2007, we had about 2.2 million people receiving SNAP benefits. As Keisha mentioned, it's called on the federal level and CalFresh benefits here in California. So in 2008, we had about 2.2 million people receiving that benefit. Mm-hmm. And our most recent figures show us at 3.9 million. So almost a doubling of the number of people receiving CalFresh benefits here in California over the period of the recession. We have started to see that demand level off, but we have not seen it start to shrink yet. And so food banks are constantly looking for new sources of food, new sources of support, and doing the best that we can to meet that need. But again, to expect private organizations to be able to shoulder the burden of massive cuts when they already are short on resources to meet the demand is completely unrealistic.
Hmm. Steve Bennett, are you seeing something similar to that over at Second Harvest Food Bank in Watsonville?
We are. We have our monthly USDA distribution day, which is on the second Monday of each month. And we study month by month, year by year, as to the amount of people that are served, how many families get food from us on that particular day. And obviously it spikes, at least for us, in the winter months in general because of, you know, in Santa Cruz County, we cater to two major things, which is, first of all, the ag industry. So there is not a lot of berries to pick, per se, during that time of the year. And the second thing is, you know, hospitality. All the tourists aren't there. So it spikes during those months. So it doesn't always make sense to compare one month to the previous. But we did compare November 2012 to November 2013. And we just fed 22% more families this last month. This was last Monday, actually, compared to the same period the previous year. We had a line of cars the entire day, and we fed 1,709 households, which is 22% over last year. So that was our first real telltale sign of what we're seeing right now.
And are you seeing shortages there?
We have a reserve. You know, we always remember the 1989 earthquake and what happened then, of course, and we learned from that day. And we've kept a reserve, at least in the non-perishable of, you know, our canned goods and whatnot. And so we've got a little bit of reserve, but with produce, you know, we're worried about what's coming.
Hmm. Sounds like the Alameda County Food Bank, Keisha. The whole, he said, you know, they're feeding 22% more people, and you know that's much more of a demand on him and then the one on you as well. So how are you responding in Alameda County to this increased demand? What are you doing?
We're really fortunate to live in a very generous community. This holiday season is always our biggest in trying to raise funds to meet the need throughout the year. So to put it into perspective, for Alameda County with these cuts, it's going to be the equivalent of about 5.5 million meals lost over the course of the 12 months from starting now. And right now, this holiday season, our goal is to raise the equivalent of 11 million meals. And so we're working very hard to do that. But that represents almost a quarter. The gap represents a quarter of our distribution. If we serve 23.3 million meals over this year, 5.5 million are lost from the November 1st cuts, and we're trying to raise 11 million this holiday season.
Mm. In terms of the generosity you mentioned, we have an email from Debbie, and she says, our group, the Broads of Broadcasting, great name, Debbie, is currently running a drive for the San Francisco Food Bank. We also completed a service day last month where we bagged 2,500 pounds of oats. They're great and a much-needed organization, San Francisco Food Bank, obviously. I've recently been there, and it's just this huge, really impressive place. And we will put up the editorial from the director of the San Francisco Food Bank, Paul Ash, up on our website, yourcallradio.org, so listeners can refer to that. If you'd like to send us an email, it's feedback@yourcallradio.org. If you go to a food bank, what have you noticed if you work there? What have you been noticing in terms of the people who are coming in? And what do you think some of the solutions are? Are you on food stamps? How has life changed for you or some of the people around you? Give us a call at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. And for any comments or questions for our guests today. You know, I have a very basic question that's really bothered me about all of this. And I'm you know, what about the core human kind of social value of feeding the poor in terms of these cuts to food stamps? Is that even talked about anymore?
Well, certainly it is talked about. And when I heard your question, I'm thinking back to a quote I really recently heard from Laurie Silverbush, who is the director of, many people have seen the movie now, A Place at the Table, which talks about hunger issues in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And she said, it is inexcusable that a country that could end hunger simply chooses not to. And it's really about a choice, and I appreciate you framing it in that manner, that we are not making a moral choice in this regard. We know that there are still so many families who are struggling. We've seen that our recovery from the recession has not benefited the people who are most in need in general, leaving our need for food assistance very, very high. Mm-hmm. And to our point of view, it is unconscionable to be talking about cuts to this program at a time when the need has never been higher. This is the highest need for food assistance since the Great Depression. And so the idea of talking about that right now, those cuts, just boggles the mind. It's also important to remember that the food stamp program was created to be responsive to economic conditions. And so it is supposed to work that when there is a downturn, when there is high unemployment, that then that program gears up to serve people who have a dramatic need during that time. We have not recovered from that dramatic need. And so this is absolutely the wrong time to even consider cutting any of the food stamp benefits.
So why did these cuts occur? You know, if it's a service people honestly need and use on a daily basis, why cut it so drastically? What have been the explanations you've been hearing?
Those explanations are primarily budgetary. I don't know that that's the that we can go into that great detail today. Nor could I claim to explain all
right.
of the things that are happening in Washington these days. I think most of us have been pretty frustrated watching our political process in Congress. And so, but again, I think you hit the nail on the head that it is a values question. Do we value feeding people appropriately and well? And I would also add that there is a significant cost to us as a society when we fail to do that, both in economic terms. We know that people who do not eat well are less healthy, have a higher need for medical care. We often say, you know, food is health care. Medicine is sick care. And we can prevent people from becoming sick. We have lots of information these days about preventable and treatable diet-related diseases that can be adequately addressed with adequate nutrition. There's also an economic argument to be made that those folks who either currently or later in life need a great deal more health care because of inadequate nutrition, it's a short-sighted argument to say we're going to cut this now and figure it out in the future. And then lastly, in terms of being a humane society, we are finding more and more evidence every day about the deep effects that even a very short period of hunger has on people, particularly as they're developing. We know more about child brain development and the role that nutrition plays in that, but we also know more about self-esteem issues as adults. So there are more and more studies coming out that are showing there are very long-term impacts from people experiencing periods of childhood hunger, even relatively short ones.
That's Sue Sigler. She's the executive director of the California Association of Food Banks. With us also is Keisha Nzui, advocacy manager of the Alameda County Community Food Bank. And Steve Bennett is on the phone with us from Santa Cruz County. He's development director for Second Harvest Food Bank there. So let's take a call. Let's talk to Bob in San Leandro. Welcome to your call.
Hi, thank you. Hey, I just had a question about solutions. I was wondering why we couldn't start like a community fund for the food banks. You just simply put money into it every year, whatever amount of money you want to put in, and then you could claim it you could take the interest at the end of the year, or you could just take a tax deduction. And that way the food banks would have plenty of money. I work at the food banks, and they always need cash, et cetera, so I'm wondering if that could be worked out.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Keisha, what do you think?
Cash is a great solution for food banks. It's not the overall solution because, as Sue said at the top, food banks cannot possibly make up this difference. But the best way to help a food bank is to donate money. And it's really easy to visit by visiting the website of all of the Bay Area food banks. But for Bob being in Alameda County, by visiting www.accfb.org. It's very easy to donate online and to donate regularly. And to a lot of people at this time of year are contributing through food drives. There's barrels all throughout the Bay Area, but they can conduct a virtual food drive online and donate money that way.
Mm-hmm. Sue?
I'd like to add that food banks are one of the most efficient users of the resources that are entrusted to their care. And the example that we like to use is that if somebody were to purchase a $2 jar of applesauce and put that in the food drive barrel, that is a wonderful act of generosity, and we encourage everybody to fill those barrels. However, that same $2 donated to a food bank could purchase 40 pounds of apples. And because food banks are utilizing all of their resources and also combining that with strong streams of donated food, they can obtain They use those dollars wisely and to purchase food as needed, and can do that very, very cost effectively, much more so than consumers at a retail location.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to another caller quickly before the break. Trina in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Well, hi there. Thank you for your program today. And I want to say that the SF Food Bank is really amazing. They do a lot of amazing things, and I encourage people to volunteer. I think there's two ways that we can maybe make the food bank a little more effective, one more easier than the other. One is I know that we do have a large population of people that go to more than one food pantry per week. They go to several. We also see this food that's being sold on the streets and Market Street. And at first when I was volunteering, I thought, wow, they must really need money. And then I thought, you know, it's kind of chronic abuse, and I know that the food bank is doing many things, and I think that's just something we have to address with compassion and not with shame, and just look at this with open eyes and see what we can do to encourage people to go to maybe one a week, or maybe one, and there are also many meals that they can go to.
Okay, thank you so much, Trina. Sue Sigler?
Thanks so much for that question, and I'd like to address that, which is that we do see people that go to more than one food pantry or food bank in a week. And it's important to remember that food banks were established to provide supplemental and emergency food, not to meet somebody's complete nutritional needs.
Backup plan.
A backup plan, exactly. We were designed to be there for you when you have a crisis or an immediate need, but not to be able to provide all of the food for a household on a regular basis. And it's important to note that 10 years ago, folks turned to food banks for about 4 to 6 days of food on average in a given month to help them stretch those dollars or those benefits that didn't quite last through to the end of the month. The average person who is turning to a food bank these days is looking for 14 to 17 days worth of food. And to put a more human face on that, when I started out my career...
Let's put a more human face on that in a little bit.
Sure.
That's Sue Sigler, Executive Director of the California Association of Food Banks. This is Your Call. I'm Hannah Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and we'll be back right after this break.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW. To take part in today's conversation, telephone us at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear new voices. And if you prefer to write rather than call, you may email us to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a message at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Hanat Baba, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Tomorrow on the show, how could digital currencies like Bitcoin change the future of our economy? Friday is our weekly media roundtable where we speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. And today, how are food banks coping with increasing demand? Today, we talk about food banks and how they're faring since the latest major cuts to the federal food stamps program. Holidays are approaching. Thanksgiving's next week, and local food banks say they're seeing more demand than ever. So how are they keeping up? If you work in a food bank or get food from one, call us with your thoughts or your questions for our guests. We want to hear from you. 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Or you can post a comment at yourcallradio.org. Before the break, Sue, you were talking about the human side of things.
That's right. We were talking about why might people turn to more than one food bank or pantry in a given week or month. And let's put yourself in the place of a parent who's trying to feed their children. And if your CalFresh benefits have run out and your food bag didn't take you all the way there, you'd absolutely be turning to another place for help. Mm-hmm. And I want to remind us of some of those numbers I was talking about in the beginning of the show about how many missing meals are out there. And so people become desperate, and we can really understand where they might be looking for help in any place that they can find it.
Hmm. Steve, I want to kind of get your perspective on that.
Well, you know, we're not a large county. We're about 260,000 people down here, and we service on average about 55,000 of those in a given month. It goes up in the winter months to around 67,000, 68,000. And we're looking at losing close to 84,000 meals in a one-month period. That's over a million meals a year, mm-hmm. Based on these cuts. So we're concerned. You know, we've got our outreach team that is they're qualified to get folks signed up that have maybe never been signed up before as well, because that's also an issue that hasn't been talked about yet today, which is the folks that are eligible that do not get benefits. Maybe they've just not aware of them or don't think they qualify. So though there are a lot of folks that are losing benefits or some of their benefits, there's still a lot of folks that qualify that aren't getting any at all. So we want to make sure that if we are going to get hit with having to provide more meals to those that are getting cut, that we want to make sure that we're offsetting it, if you will, and making sure we're getting folks signed up. So we've got four folks on staff that are qualified. And we got, because we have seen more walk-ins lately as well. And I know most of your listeners probably don't know the demographics where we are, but we're kind of hidden at the furthest end of our county, not in an industrial area or a high-profile area where folks would walk in. You'd have to make an effort to come find our food bank. And so for folks to walk in is almost a rarity to us, and we've seen quite a few lately. So we're concerned, so we're doing everything we can to offset that.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Let's go to another caller who is calling from Oakland, Anonymous. In Oakland. Hi, welcome to Your Call.
Yes, I've gone to several Alameda County food banks. I'm getting an echo here. I have a special diet, and I eat mostly vegetables and some chicken. And what I've found at the pantries is a lot of canned goods, beans, and grains, which are easy for other people to donate, and I wish I could eat those because they are cheaper and so on, but I can't. It's kind of deleterious to my body system, so I've had to seek out other ways to get my vegetables. Besides, you know, I'm on Social Security now and disability, so that's a very, very low income.
Okay, thanks.
And I have an idea. I don't know. There are a lot of backyard gardens around the city. And to put out a call some way to encourage people, if they want to, donate the fresh vegetables to the Alameda County Food Bank. Because I really think that the food bank could really take more fresh vegetables.
Okay. Thanks for that call. Keisha, the gardens, the many gardens in Alameda County.
Well,
I would just like to say that I'm really proud to work at a food bank with the support of the California Association of Food Banks, that more than half of the food that we distribute is fresh fruits and vegetables. Our warehouse was filled with kiwis recently. We have peppers. We have plenty of potatoes and onions and apples, anything that can be found in California. And because we live where we live all year round, we have last year we distributed more than 16 million pounds of fresh fruits and vegetables. And so I would encourage everyone to find out where our fresh produce distributions are each week. But our pantries are well supplied with fresh fruits and vegetables. So I hope that everyone can find that.
Do you take donations of fresh fruits and vegetables?
So much of what we receive through the farm to table program is donated produce that we then pay to transport, mostly from the Central Valley. And we encourage folks who garden to donate to their local food pantry, because that at a smaller scale, and that would be really meaningful for many local pantries that are almost all completely volunteer run. Oakland is definitely a hotbed of urban agriculture, so it's a great place to grow food. There's many community gardens, and they're doing great work to get that food out to people who need it.
Let me give that number again to our listeners. 866-798-TALK is the number to call if you have an experience with the food bank, if you have an experience with food stamps and their recent cuts. Give us a call. 866-798-TALK. That's 798-8255, or send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Also, if you have a question for our guests today, I want to get to the question of vulnerable populations. This idea that we talked about the values question in terms of just feeding the people of your country. And we got an email from someone who said, I'd like the presenters to respond to my belief that nourishing healthy food is a human right. The U.S. government should be required by law to provide for its residents throughout the country. And, you know, many people feel that way, especially in regards to vulnerable populations. That New York Times article profiled someone, Elliot Porter, 46 years old, whose food stamps benefit dropped to $189 a month from $200, is a former property manager who's technically homeless but living with a friend while he goes to college. He had to perform a calculation with everything he reached for on the shelves, weighing his personal taste against cost and health. A nutritionist who's helping him lose weight to avoid diabetes told him to buy a natural brand of peanut butter without sugar. It cost $4.39. He said he can't afford that. Sick people and seniors, children, how will this affect them? Let's talk about seniors first, if we could, Sue.
Well, certainly seniors are at a disadvantage in California. And the reason for that is that those who are on SSI are not eligible for CalFresh participation in California. And so we really do have a large population of vulnerable seniors that it is much more difficult to serve in California than it is in other states.
Mm. And nearly every household that receives SNAP or CalFresh in California has a child or a senior in it. I don't know where our country turned a corner that feeding people is something that we don't value, that we instead value balancing budgets on the backs of poor people. And I feel like we've turned a corner where being poor is almost like a criminal activity. I don't know how that happened. And I think every food bank across the country is fighting to turn back the tide to being that food is a basic human right. Our problem of hunger in the United States is not an issue of not having enough food or not having enough resources. We just need to value all people enough that they, if when they work, that they earn enough money to be able to support themselves and their families, and that if they are having troubled times, that we are there to help them.
Do you think there's enough advocacy for the poor in this regard?
I think there are a lot of amazing advocates throughout the country who are working so hard each and every day, bringing their voices to all of the people who get to make decisions. I think that there are other causes and just other folks who have greater resources to make their voices heard, whether that's just literally more voices or more money to be able to influence the decision-making locally and federally.
Let's go to another caller who's calling at 866-798-8255. Let's go to Margie in San Francisco. Hi, Margie. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thank you for this important program, first of all. And I learned something important today. I've been, donating turkeys for years. And so today I heard that it seems like it would be more helpful if I donated the money instead of the turkeys. Is that correct?
All right. What's the answer?
I would confirm that likely your local food bank has a source to purchase turkeys that is less than the retail price that you would pay.
Okay. And Keisha, yes?
Money is great. Donating food is awesome.
Indeed.
And donating money, we can, as Sue said, spread your donor dollars so much further than you can at your local grocery store.
Steve Bennett in Santa Cruz, would you rather have a turkey or the money?
We definitely want the money, but we always tell folks, you have to do what's comfortable for you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's important to you to give food, then please do so. But as the other guests on the panel said, money does go so much further in our buying power of what we're able to do with it.
I'm thinking she wanted to bring a certain holiday spirit by bringing in a turkey, perhaps.
And you have to commend that.
And thank you for every turkey. That's really a wonderful thing to do. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for the call, Margie. Again, that number is 866-798-TALK. If you'd like to chime in on this conversation about food banks, if you work in a food bank, if you are a patron of a food bank, if you are on food stamps, what have been the effects of the recent cuts, if any, on you? 866-798-TALK. Steve, being in Watsonville, you're near many farms. And we just spoke about fresh produce in stock at the food banks, and we didn't get your answer. So what about your food bank?
Well, as we are the oldest food bank in California, second oldest in the country, and our ED has been there for a good portion of that time. And over the years, we've built up great relationships with all the ag companies. We're surrounded by berry fields. And we're very happy. We got an award last year from Feeding America as the highest percentage of produce. We distributed 63% of the food that left our food bank was fruits and vegetables. In fact, this last month, it was 70%. So, we're really looking at the overall health of the folks. We're not just giving them food. We're giving them the right food. So we want to make sure that we're attacking diabetes and childhood obesity. Folks are down to their last couple dollars. They may go to the value menu at the local fast food place. And if that's what they're going to get for a dollar because they can't afford the $4 strawberries at the grocery store, we get that. Mm. So we're going to give them those $4 strawberries that they can't afford.
Mm. How many?
We can't change everything they do at home. All we can do is help, though we do have. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to get this last part out. We do have one of the things we focus on is classes that we give. We have a program called Passion for Produce where we teach low-income families and have empowered them to be educators within their community, mostly bilingual. Watsonville is 80% Hispanic, so we have to address that and make sure that we're doing everything we can to teach folks healthier habits. And we've seen a lot of things turn around. We've seen children teaching their parents who have taught their grandparents and they've lost 30 pounds, they've lost 40 pounds, things that they've done by eating right. We're not just giving them that old junk Top Ramen that's in the back of the pantry anymore.
Hmm. How about, you just mentioned the demographics. Have those demographics changed since these food stamp cuts? Have you been noticing different kinds of people coming in?
We are. We're seeing folks come in our lobby for the first time that are confused and just lost and embarrassed and don't know what to do. And I have to talk them off the ledge, if you will, at first. And you're down to your last $300, and your car breaks down, and you got to get to work, and this is something they're not used to. We've seen new families that have never experienced this before.
Let's go to Keisha in Alameda County. How many new people do you think do you have numbers in terms of how many new people are visiting or the demographics?
I don't know yet this month how many new calls we have to our helpline, but typically it's a few hundred each month. This November is the highest call volume month, and over the last 3 years, it's averaged about 3,500 referrals, which is 12 to 13,000 actual people who are served. But the one thing we want to get across is that hunger is in every part of Alameda County. It does not avoid any community, any demographic, young, old, every ethnicity, and every zip code in Alameda County is helped by our food bank.
Let's give out the phone number one more time. We have some callers on the line, but in case you wanted to chime in, 866-798-TALK is the number. Let's go to Kay in San Francisco. Welcome to your call.
Thank you so much, and thank you for doing this program and all the programs that are done. And all the programs that are done, including this one about food stamps, if we do one about global warming, or if we do a program about whatever we're doing, a wonderful program about with wonderful people that are trying to help, it all boils down to one issue only in this country, and that's that we've become a corporate state. And the separation of corporation and state is the issue on every level, on food production, on pharmaceuticals, on global warming. It's nice to dissect it all and talk about how outraged we are about all these aspects of it, but the woman recently said, I don't know how we got to this point where feeding poor people has become like a crime. This is how we got to that point. Every single victory in the Supreme Court, every single grassroots completely coordinated effort from the grassroots of the right wing of the corporate machine is how we got to this point. But the reality is no one has the wherewithal, because we separate out every single little issue, we never deal with this one big issue of the separation of corporation and state.
Okay, thank you, Kay, for that call. Sue Sigler, you want to take that on? Kind of the overriding, kind of the elephant in the room, so to speak.
Well, I think that's probably deserves a whole nother hour on that topic alone. But I will say that demographics in the U.S. with respect to income distribution are changing. That relates to a lot of different kind of policy choices that we make at the national level. I don't personally necessarily disagree with the caller. I referenced earlier what's been happening in Washington. I think we are at a place where nationally we've got conflicting viewpoints from different sectors. But as we continue to engage in stalemates as a way of resolving or not resolving, depending on your point of view, it's clear that American people continue to suffer and continue to suffer hunger in larger numbers than ever before.
More than one person today talked about it feels like it's a crime to ask for food stamps or it feels like it's a crime to be poor. And I'm wondering if there's any conversation any of you have had or are having about semantics and wording in terms of, for example, the term entitlement programs, and kind of this, what some people are feeling is contempt for the poor, you know, quote unquote, the welfare state, people on the right talking about, you know, if we get them off these programs, maybe they'll, you know, get up and get jobs and get up as if the solutions are in the hands of the poor. I'm wondering if you've had any of those kind of conversations.
Well, certainly we see those conversations happening in the media quite a bit, and I think it's important to look at what it is that people are coping with right now. We have a large debate happening right now about minimum wage. So we know that two adults can work full-time in a household and still not be able to adequately feed and house themselves, provide for their basic needs, especially here in the Bay Area with one of the highest housing costs in the country. Mm. So, yes, it is very disheartening to see people who are working very hard blamed for their own situation. It's easy to be able to say, go out and get a job. Well, excuse me, we have, you know, an extraordinarily high rate of unemployment right now. Those jobs may or may not exist. And so I think it's easy to blame the victim, but it's harder to look at really what is the situation and how do good people find themselves in desperate circumstances through no fault of their own. Additionally, Keisha mentioned earlier that when we look at who the SNAP recipients are, 76% of the households receiving SNAP in the U.S. include a child, an elderly person, or a disabled person. Those are not people who can just go out and get a job.
All right. We have a full bone full of calls. Let's go to our calls. Karen in Soquel, welcome to
Your call. Megan in SoCal, California.
Go ahead.
I live close to Santa Cruz, and my point is a little bit philosophical going to practical. I remember a number of years ago, the Dalai Lama said to a bunch of scientists and artists, you know, go home, take care of your own little Tibets. And that really stuck with me, and I moved to Santa Cruz, and the homeless situation was criminal. So we, as a group of professionals, started a group called Bridging Warriors, and we work out of the Resource Center for Nonviolence. They've been there for 36 years. We offer a host of free services to any, well, it started out with veterans, but they're very hard to reach. The services are available to anyone in the county. They're free, and they go from a group counseling for PTSD, veteran counseling. We have a doctor on staff who gives free medical evaluations and alternative care. We've got exercise classes. We've got music fusion, so for those people who are homeless and have instruments and want to play. So we're a resource center, okay. And then we send them out to the food banks that they need. Last week, I had a carload of people, a whole family, pull up in their automobile. They thought we were a food bank. And, I mean, they looked just desperate. So for me, it's like, look into my heart. What can I do? And, you know, I'm putting all my money on the line because my life is worth nothing if people aren't doing well around me.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Karen, for that call. I also want to bring up something many of our callers on the line are bringing up, which is many of them are concerned about food being stolen by volunteers and sold on the streets. And it's not just one caller, it's a couple. So I'm wondering if you can address this. Is this a concern for you? Steve Bennett, can you start?
You know, I heard that mentioned earlier, and you know, we don't see it too much here. The person that runs our agency program, we do monitor all the agencies. We do police them, if you will, just to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing within each agency, and everything seems fine. We don't see it on the street here, though.
Okay. Keisha?
It's not something I'm aware of as being a problem with our food pantries. As I mentioned earlier, the average staff at our food pantries is zero. They're almost all completely volunteer-run and completely volunteer-resourced, meaning how
right.
they get their food is they pool their resources together to be able to purchase it.
Well, what about the volunteers themselves? Because that's what people are saying.
Well, one thing, those from what I've witnessed at our food pantries is many of the volunteers at those food pantries are also clients. They're there helping, giving back, and they're also in need of food. And so I haven't witnessed them stealing food. I've witnessed volunteers getting food that they need.
Volunteers are allowed to take food.
They're allowed to take food that they need. Okay.
When their shift is done, they get it back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Sue?
And I would add that every food bank has policies and practices in place to ensure that the food goes
goes to the people for whom it's intended. And for that food to wind up in a place where it's not intended is an extraordinarily rare event.
All right, let's go to another call. Someone's calling from Berkeley. Karen, hi. Welcome to your call.
Good morning. I wanted to let everybody out there know that in the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights, the mandate of the government is to promote the general welfare and provide for the common good. And that has been a part of the law of the land since 1775. And these programs are not entitlements. They are constitutional guarantees. And so I would encourage people that call their congressional representatives or the White House or whatever to reinforce that statement so that people are not slighted by thinking there's something wrong with them if they're poor. And all these screaming politicians in Washington who get three meals a day and have a roof over their head and are never hungry are screaming entitlement when actually they are in violation of the mandate of the Constitution. That's what I'd like to let everybody know.
All right. Thank you, Karen. Sue, that basic sense of it's a right.
Well, I think we've heard that theme come up a couple of times during our discussion.
Right.
And I agree with the caller that I do believe it's government's role to promote the welfare of people. And that starts with making sure that everybody has enough to eat.
Hmm. We have just a couple of minutes left. If you want to sneak your call in, 866-798-TALK or your email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We got an email from someone saying, hello, I'm a single mother and I receive food stamps. I'm very concerned about my family's health and try to eat fresh, organic produce as much as possible. Even with the benefits going down by $20 a month, I always try to have plenty of food stamp money to go around, and I'm surprised that people seem to think that food stamps are not enough. I cook almost everything from scratch and buy organic produce whenever I can. The type of food that costs the most is the prepackaged processed stuff. It would be great if there was a way to reward people for eating healthy food. And she will have to have the last word. Thank you very much, Sue Sigler, Keisha Nzuni, and Steve Bennett for being here with us on today's show. I'm Hanat Baba. This is Your Call. And we will see you next time. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. Digital currencies like Bitcoin change the future of our economy. Bitcoin, the most popular online cash system, saw a victory this week when federal officials told members of the Senate Homeland Security Committee that virtual currencies are not illegal. But how do we regulate online money? Do you use them? If digital currencies are allowed to grow, how will Bitcoin affect the global economy? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Matt Martin and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ellie Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.